Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. You can get in touch with the show by text to 086-353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777 or email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Today on the show, I should say, if you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't bother texting as we won't be able to see your text message, but you can, of course, still email us. Shortly, we'll be talking to Josephine Plattenberg, the Spelt Baker, about her work and Taste Kilkenny and other small producers in the county. A little later on, we're going to be talking to Mads McKeever down in Cork, who owns the Brown Envelope Seed Company, about her work down there, and she might have some tips on us for growing chilies. But first, Mags, what's going on in the kitchen this week?
In the kitchen? Well, I'm getting ready for baking class tomorrow, actually. So, got a couple of people coming for bread class tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, so I'll be getting ready for that this evening. Other than that, kitchen is a little bit quiet. More drama actually outside.
Oh,
with
really?
Foxes and hens and possible neighbour's cat as well.
Oh dear, so, what happened?
during the day, like just a dusk yesterday evening, I think something cleared about 5 or 6 hens.
Oh God.
Yeah, and one of the best layers, well, actually it's not very many good layers at the moment, but the best layer, she's now gone, which is a bit sad. It was a nice blue hen.
I've heard a lot about it on, or a lot of people saying on Twitter at the moment that there's a lot, you know, a lot of foxes are taking things. I wonder, is it because it's late in the winter, other stuff isn't around, they're looking for easier targets?
Yeah, I kind of think, I wonder, is it, you know, they're getting into the breeding season, so are they kind of building themselves up or something? I don't know. I suppose the weather's been pretty miserable as well, so maybe they're a bit hungrier, but there's been so much activity. Like, the dogs are constantly on fox alert because there's foxes through all of the time. So it was kind of inevitable at some point, really. Which is a bit sad. But anyway, as my teenager said, it's just the foxes taking back their land.
Yeah, teenagers tend to be a bit contrary with stuff like that. And you've got a class then coming up tomorrow on a happier note.
Yeah, I do.
And you'll be doing sourdough and...
Sourdough, mostly, well, fresh yeasted breads and sourdough. So a bit of both.
I heard a little bit about sourdough at an event that was run in Highbank last Saturday night. It was one of the Be a Bug events. It was talking about fermented foods. And Joe Fitzmaurice was down from Clough Jordan talking about his work up there, some baking and the kind of stuff he does, Rye at Rye. And there were lots and lots of bread samples for us to enjoy. I see a basket of bread over there as well. And we might get to enjoy some of that later. But there was also some other people talking about other types of foods that are fermented and how good they are for us.
Yeah, yeah. There's quite a revival, really, of fermented foods.
Fantastic.
I don't know. I actually would love to have gone to that last week. I don't know an awful lot about, you know, kefirs or, you know, making kind of cultured or fermenting vegetables and that. But it does seem to be very healthy and a great way to preserve food.
Eleanor from the greengrocer in town was one of the speakers, and she's a trained nutritional therapist. So I had a chat with her afterwards and I asked would she come in someday and talk to us about it. So she said she would. So that's something to put in the diary and look forward to. Like you said, it's very on trend at the moment, but really when you listen to the health benefits and the talk about how it nurtures good bacteria in the gut and so on, it just makes perfect sense to me. And it's probably something that we should look at in a bit more detail.
Yep, we will do.
Josephine. We're joined by Josephine Plattenberg. From Spelt Baker here in Kilkenny. Thanks very much for coming in, Josephine.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. We love to have local producers in talking about their wares and so on. You're based in Kilkenny now, aren't you?
We're in Goran.
Very good.
Goran Atait, yeah.
And when did you set yourself up out in Goran to do the baking?
About 6-7 years ago, I'd say. We started small in the kitchen like everyone starts, and then courtesy of leader funding, moved into a shed and have a designated bakehouse now, and more space, more options.
The bakehouse sounds very posh.
Oh, it is very posh.
Sounds better than a converted shed or a bakehouse.
No, it's definitely a bakehouse now. It used to harbour a horse and all that, and chickens as well. Actually, my contribution to the chicken story, a fox mags will nearly always just take one.
Oh.
If you have more, you have a mink or something such like.
Oh. There's huge debate about that.
Because the fox takes one and goes away. He probably comes back the next day for another one. And another one, they're very regular. But if they take more than one, you have a dog or you have a mink or you have something not...
I wonder whether a cat from next door, from an abandoned
farm. Very unlikely.
Yeah.
Cats will kill one.
Chicks.
They tend not to get frenzied. Like, I don't think they'd kill more than one.
Mm, okay.
But they are.
All right, thank you for that.
There's a lot of things out to get your chickens, really. I remember telling everybody before Christmas when I lost some turkeys, I had a wildlife camera set up so that to keep an eye on the birds. And the night that whatever came and killed eight of my turkeys, the turkeys had actually filled the memory stick on the camera with just selfies. So I got no picture.
It was all a Bunby conspiracy. They just wanted to leave.
I went through all of these videos looking at them, expecting to see the culprit any second, and it was just another turkey picking at the camera. And it didn't work very well. So back to bread then, out in Goran. Yeah. People would know you, I suppose, from the stall at the farmer's market on a Thursday.
Well, I should hope so. Yeah, we also supply a couple of shops. There's four shops that we supply every day in Kilkenny. The Little Green Grocer amongst them, the Gourmet Store across the road, the Good Earth Health Food Shop in New Park, and Chris Wong's in John Street.
Oh, very good.
So, but it's been very interesting for me. We had a little stall on the Yule Fest and the parade, the Christmas market. And that was on a Saturday and on a Sunday, like weekends. And it was really interesting to see how few people make the Thursday market. You know, Thursday is a real farmer's market day in farming towns. But maybe Kilkenny isn't that anymore. So an awful lot of people kind of looked at us and said, oh, are you new? Since when are you in Kilkenny? And we've been trading on the market for 3 years on a Thursday. So I'm on a mission now in January to...
Spread the word.
Yeah, when you're in your own little bubble and you're so, you know, intense on something, you tend to think everybody knows what you're doing, whereas they don't.
A lot of people work on Thursdays, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There isn't huge employment. I know things have changed with Cartoon Saloon taking so many offices in town and bringing young people into town. And I can see the difference that has made to the farmer's market on a Thursday. But there isn't a huge working population in the city, really. You know, there's an awful lot more outside.
Well, we have a lot of people coming in, especially for the market.
Mm.
But they can only do that when they're not working.
Yeah.
And people try and get in if they're working, a lunch hour isn't long enough. So, you know, it's been interesting how, you know, you still have to raise your profile all the time.
As a regular customer of yours, Myrie, said to say hello by text message here. And if anybody's listening and like to send in a message, you can send us a text to 086-353-7782. So you supply the shops in town and then you have the stall at the farmer's market on a Thursday. When you were starting out, was the farmer's market always something that you were aiming for, or...?
Yes, but when we were starting out, we didn't have those kind of quantities. When you produce in your own kitchen and you produce something that all has to be made the day you're selling it, you can't do a market. Mm. Like, that would be a very small, insignificant little table.
Yeah.
So the first 2 years, we just had a couple of shops that we supplied. And then when we got the bakehouse, we moved on to markets.
Now, there's something very different about your bread, though, isn't there? So you're not called the Spelt Baker just because it sounds nice.
No, because it's the clue is in the name. We use spelt flour only, which is an old grain. I like to say that the Roman Empire was fought on spelt. It was the bread grain until we developed wheat. For many reasons, most of them kind of lined in with the Industrial Revolution for the process of growing and the process of production. It was much easier. Spelt is a complicated little grain. And because of that, it's mostly grown, or used to be mostly grown in recently in the organic market. But because it's so popular now, it's coming back. The continent, quite a lot. There was a worldwide spelt shortage and something equally exciting 3 years ago.
Good Lord.
And it was very exciting because we were just getting bigger and I couldn't get spelt flour anymore. And I thought, this is great, you know, you just found this niche for myself and now we have a worldwide shortage and we were all queuing up at the, when the trucks came over from France, kind of, you know, I want some of those bags.
Grabbing the bags off the trucks. Just watch that microphone there, Josephine. It has a habit of moving away from your face, so you'll be getting quieter and quieter. So the difference between spelt and wheat then in terms of your using it and in terms of taste and what it means to the consumer, what are the differences?
It's very subtle. Now, I have a basket here and I'd say you wouldn't know it's not normal bread, as they say.
Mm, inverted commas.
Yes. It's spelt is, I think, less processed. The grain itself is less modified and therefore has a much more simple structure. Now, it has gluten in it, so celiacs can't eat it, but people who are wheat intolerant will eat it.
Okay.
And wheat intolerance seems to be a much bigger problem. Because of our overindulgence in wheat, since we discovered pasta and sandwiches and tend to eat Weetabix for the morning, sandwich at lunch and pasta in the evening, a lot of us have become just overfed and, you know, wheat has become an issue. So going back to spelt is a much more simple structure. There is some evidence, and I have some customers that are celiacs, but they eat the sourdough. They eat a spelt sourdough. Now that you have to go and talk to your practitioner about. But it's sometimes it's wheat gluten. You're not, so basically anyone can eat our bread. It's very good tasting. It's a nice strong bread grain, but it has health benefits for people who are struggling with some food issues.
I do often wonder about people who state that they have an allergy or an intolerance for something, if that is an accurate description of what they're suffering from, or if they are blaming the wrong thing. So people have a headache after drinking a bottle of wine and they're blaming the sulfites. Maybe it's the alcohol.
Well, maybe it's just the quantity.
Exactly. But likewise then, somebody who says that they are gluten intolerant or have a problem with gluten, maybe it is the wheat. Maybe it's not the gluten at all.
It could also, if you look at a factory produced bread that has 36 ingredients, of which 30 shouldn't be in there, it could be any one of those. What we call bread these days is quite a scandal. You know, it's just not bread. So I think gluten's got a very bad press. Ireland has a very high rate of celiacs. Where that's coming from, I don't know, but it's certainly not as high as is the public impression at the moment. I think people often... There's a funny thing as well, that it's only this generation has started eating fresh yeast bread. Yeast is a very active substance. It rises the bread. And when people say, I feel bloated after bread, it could just be that you've eaten it too fresh. Leave it till the next day. Like my parents would never have eaten fresh yeast bread. Okay. It was always the next day.
Okay.
Because yeast takes, I think, 12 hours to settle. So when you eat it warm out of the oven, you want to have quite a strong stomach.
Okay.
Because it's still working. Therefore, you're feeling bloated because you're rising.
Yeah. You know? So it's producing carbon dioxide and so on inside you. It's continuing the process.
So it is continuing to work. And this thing of bread being have to be warm, and, you know, people putting those warm bread flavours into their air conditioning so that it smells of fresh bread.
It can smell like that, but just don't eat it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's very tasty, but if you're not feeling well after eating bread, that could be it. It doesn't mean you have to cut bread. Try it the next day.
Okay.
It's not like people tend to throw out old bread, which is, you know, another new generation problem.
I think we're obsessed here with having fresh bread today, today's bread today kind of thing.
Yes, that
which is not necessary at all. And most, like, good breads will last for days.
Yes.
But people think they have to have it today and then it's gone after that.
Yeah, that, and it's a preference, but it certainly is better for you health-wise on the second day.
Joe Fitzmaurice was actually saying that even his own bread he prefers on day three.
Yeah.
Now, I presume the texture has kind of changed, but he feels that the flavour has had time to kind of settle down.
Yeah.
So it's when you're dealing, particularly with the sourdough breads, you're dealing with a live culture. There's stuff kind of happening there. Mm. There's a process underway. So, of course, it's going to change over time.
I mean, the sourdough is fine on the first day, even if you're fragile, because there's no yeast in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very slow fermented. It's all broken down. It's actually really easy bread to digest.
You did kind of hint at that, where some people who have intolerances enjoy still the sourdough bread. So what's going on there? What is that process that's kind of helping them?
It's basically the sourdough that I sell tomorrow. Sorry, that was me whacking the table with the pen.
You feel very strongly about it.
Yes. It's long on. Like, that went on at 12 o'clock today. In big basins with flour, salt and the sourdough starter, which is only flour and water. So they go and bubble slowly now, and tomorrow morning about 1:30 I'll put those out of the basins into baskets to sit for another 3 hours or four, and then they get baked out. So they have a good 12 hour and more. And some people like ferment for a whole week. Like Joe was, I met Joe at a seminar once, and he came in all excited and said, I have it cracked. I have a fast baking sourdough. It only takes a week. I said, that isn't fast. You know, so
this is slow food.
It's all relative, yes. Yeah. So ours goes, like I always tell people, if you want to order a sourdough, tell me before midday, the day before.
Okay.
And then that's when they go on. And because of that, everything is broken down. It's kind of, in a way, it's pre-digested.
Okay.
You know, there is no hard work left when you eat that bread.
But I think also you get like a huge flavour. So it has a wholesomeness that you won't get if you're eating a sliced pan. So you don't need to eat as much of it.
Oh, God, yeah. You get a flavour. It's very different because of obviously.
But there's flavour, first of all.
That's why it's called sourdough, though. Some people, sourdough's gone very modern. So everyone wants a sourdough. And then they taste it and say, ooh, that's very sour.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, ah, yes. That's why it's a sourdough. So yes, it has a strong flavour, and if you add more flavours and they go through it, if you like. But yeah, it's a heavy bread as well. You know, it's, if you have your sliced pan, it's all of air, and the sourdough is quite weighty if I have 7 sourdoughs on a tray, you do a bit of a lifting. So it's there's more power in it. Like you can eat a sliced pan in a sitting, but you'd never be able to eat one of those.
We did a bit of an experiment in the studio last year where Mags brought in a piece of her sourdough bread, and we brought in a slice of bread from, you know, a large sliced pan. And we took the same volume of bread and squished them down. And it was amazing. The slice of white kind of factory produced bread, you know, squished down to absolutely nothing. There was just
air.
Mostly air in there. Now I see sourdoughs though creeping into the supermarkets, and it says sourdough on the packets, but there's still a long list of ingredients. How come that's happening?
There are ingredients at all and stuff, because there's no legal definition for sourdough, so anybody can call a loaf of bread a sourdough if they've got maybe some starter in it and add in whatever else they want. There's nothing to stop you legally.
Okay, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that just after the ad break, but we better go to an ad break now. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782. Call us now on 056 7762 777. Welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and thank you to those who have contacted the show. We're here live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and you can send in your questions or comments by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text the show, as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us on thekitchengarden@crkc.ie. Another hello to you from Frank this time. I don't know whether you know these people, whether they're regular customers of yours or not, but
hello.
Another text from Frank. So we were talking before the break about sourdough and the definition of sourdough, and how it's, because it's trendy, we're seeing it in the supermarkets, but maybe it's not the real thing. Your bread, what's in it?
In a sourdough should only have flour, salt and water.
3 ingredients.
That's it. Now, my slightly funkier sourdough has flour, salt and beer.
Oh.
That's the one I brought today. It's made with Costello's red ale instead of water.
Right. We like beer and like Costello's.
All ale, not water.
Wow. No, it follows the old principle, why use water if you can use beer?
It smells very nice.
Yes.
Are we allowed to tear a little piece off of that there?
There's a knife in there somewhere as well, if you want to
put a board and everything
about it.
Oh, very organised. Might stick that basket down on the chair behind you there, ladies, will you? Because just bouncing around on the table, it's picking up, the mics are picking up noise. They're very, very sensitive.
There we are.
So, just the 3 ingredients in them. Now, you didn't just bring in the sourdough, though. What else did you bring into the basket?
No, I have the sourdough, of course, and the baguettes. We do crusty French baguettes in white and in seeded. And I have the stromboli, which is kind of our signature dish. It's a white yeast dough wrapped around roast peppers and cheese. And I have soda, just to prove that we are traditional Irish bakers as well.
Oh, very good, very good. Oh, thanks very much, Meg. Now, I get a sandwich made with those strombolis out in Glossary and Goodies.
Oh, yes.
For my lunch occasionally. It makes a delicious sandwich. And Siobhan then heats it in her panini toaster.
Oh, very nice.
It's gorgeous. So I'm a big fan of those. They look really pretty as well.
They do. I'm too lazy to make sandwiches. So I fire this at the children in the morning and that's it.
Like. Oh, they take them away then for their lunch. And was this part of the inspiration for you getting into the baking? Like you wanted it for yourself and your family, or did you see a business opportunity?
Well, I started it for ourselves because being German myself and the sliced pan never got on so well. And I did a bit of baking. And then the key really was that my husband had asthma and got told by his homeopath to eat spelt instead of wheat.
Right.
And so I just changed the flour and started making bread with spelt. And it kind of, Glossary and Goodies opened similar time to when we started. So I started supplying her with spelt bread. And it was all of a sudden discovered there was a niche.
And did it make a difference to the asthma?
That combined with going off coffee and solved the asthma, touch wood.
Oh my God.
He's completely off inhalers and everything.
Right.
Now, it was a big, kind of long, ongoing homeopathic treatment, but it went from being quite bad to being virtually non-existent.
And is he not tempted to go back onto the coffee and see if just the bread made the difference?
He does drink a cup of coffee again.
Jeez, I couldn't live without the coffee. But I've just had some of that bread while you were yapping away there. It's absolutely lovely, isn't it?
Mm.
And the smell from that, that's an incredible...
Be nice with kind of a... You know, a vintage cheddar or something like that. Yeah. And some beer.
And some beer to go with it, yeah.
There is a lot of flavour in that
bread. There is.
That could support like some really strong flavours along with it. How much would a loaf of that be now, Josephine? Do you mind me asking?
On the market, it's a fiver.
A fiver,
yeah.
Right.
But that's actually very good value because you put a whole bottle of beer into it, so it's actually very expensive. Because I've made it a few times, I was thinking, oh my God, no one's going to pay me for this because it's an expensive product, and particularly if you're putting good beer in. Yeah.
Well, sure, the bottle of Costello's will retail in the shop for over €3.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, so it's a cheap bread, really.
Yeah, really. Well, it's a bloody good bread.
Yeah. No, it's one of my pet subjects that, you know, you have to pay for good food.
Mm.
There's some very interesting statistics that our grandparent generation spend well over half their disposable income. Actually, I think it's nearly 80%, 75-80% on food.
My God.
And we've cut that down to under 10%.
Because, and the rest of it goes on stuff.
Well, leisure has been our big mantra, and there's nothing wrong with that either. But I think to spend, you know, you have to spend on good food. Good food has to be, and I, you know, reckon our bread is good food. But it's just a thought, thinking of where we buy our food and what we buy has become more important again. More and more people are looking for it.
Now, that's a nice kind of introduction to some of the other producers that we have in Kilkenny, because it's not just about bread. I know we're lucky to have yourself and some other bakers in Kilkenny, but there's a lot of fabulous small artisan producers of food products in Kilkenny, isn't there?
Oh, there's loads. There's loads. And I mean, you can miss them so quickly. It's all about this, you know, knowing who's in your neighbourhood and who's not. And there's load of people. Kilkenny is a real foodie place.
Mm.
And people are, you know, make jams, make relishes, anything.
And you guys have banded together a little bit, haven't you?
There is Taste Kilkenny is a group, yeah, that is looking at exactly that, food producers in Kilkenny.
Okay.
We're at Savour, different places. Being a bread person, I'm always a little bit out because I don't have the range. It's all about, you know, when you produce and when you sell. I can't produce loads of stuff in advance. I can't produce anything in advance, really.
Mm.
So we're always a little bit different. But I mean, it's good to know other people and work with other people and know what their issues are. And it's just been my thing in the last couple of weeks that I think, you know, it's not only the small producers, it's the small retailers. It's knowing where we shop and where we could shop and what's available out there. When for a whole generation, shopping seems to be supermarkets.
The power of our euro, each euro we spend, there's an awful lot we can do with that. As well as getting stuff for ourselves, we can actually dictate where the profit from that euro goes.
Mm.
And so we can support an international multinational, or we can support a local business. And nobody likes walking past an empty shop in the high street or even in their local village.
Yeah, and I think a lot of places are closing at the moment. And I mean, like, we've lost our village shop in Goran only very recently. And that kind of thing is always pulls you up a bit and says, listen, gotta have done something.
Yeah.
Because it's not nice to see people closing. There's small businesses going out of, because they haven't just made it. And I wonder, are we doing enough? Are we paying attention to what's out there? And are we maybe even fooling ourselves a little bit, saying it's so much cheaper in supermarkets? Or are we spending the profits on the centre aisle?
Yeah, well, there are, you know, kind of things that they draw you in on,
yes,
and so on.
It's all cleverly set up. And yeah. I mean, yes, of course, I shop in supermarkets as well. You just have to. But, you know, maybe just a little bit of a choice for something else to have a look, even to know what's out there and who's out there.
In our local towns, villages, and even on the streets that we like, one shop has an influence on another. So if somebody goes to the baker, they may also drop into the shop next door. If somebody goes to the post office, they may stop in for a coffee in a coffee shop next door. So these build up a critical mass of people coming into the town and then feed off each other. If we lose one or two, or even, or you know, some more of those, it has a big, big impact.
And it's not only food, it could be petrol stations.
Yeah.
You know, it could be all these shops that have always been there and we depend on them. You know, I mean, God, I rang our local petrol station. Thanks very much, Pat, in case you're listening. Years ago, I had a visitor from Germany and she had, you know, flight at 2 o'clock, no petrol in the car. I rang him at midnight saying, Pat, any chance you could open? And he did.
Wow.
And she got petrol and she got to the airport.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you can't do that if you go to the pig stations all the time.
I know. Yeah, actually, I have a similar story from last week. I was missing a school jumper and one boy had no school jumper, but I was at work in town. So I phoned, I actually texted the lady in the shop in Thomastown and said, I won't be out before 6 o'clock. Is there any chance you could put a jumper in a bag and leave it in the shop next door? And of course she did it, no problem. And you know, that is a small little shop in Thomastown, but a very significant shop. And I was much obliged, very kind.
Yeah, no, we could support our local businesses where we can, absolutely. Now, I was looking through, when I was doing the research before you came in, I had a look through Crow and Cottages. My place is listed on Taste Kilkenny as one of the cookery schools, and we're all about attracting people into Kilkenny to kind of participate in courses and so on. But I had looked through the producers on there. There's a lot of them I know, but there's a huge range of stuff. So as well as the bakers and the brewers, there's the ice cream makers, there's our friends out in Highbank doing the apple juice and a whole pile of other stuff, syrup and even vinegar now. Rod was talking at the event last week about the new vinegar
and
that they're
spirits,
making out there.
They do spirits too, don't they?
They do. Very strong spirits.
Very nice.
Indeed, yeah. And then we have the Kilkenny Free Range, Second Nature Oils as well, which is one that I wasn't particularly familiar with. Our friends in Cake Face, then Mooncoin Beetroot, the lads in Mooncoin Beetroot, I love what they do down there. A huge range of stuff.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's, you know, you can't, there's loads of stuff you can get. Like, we use Second Nature Oils now instead of olive oils, and it's great.
Where are they based?
In Arlingford.
Right, okay. I didn't know about those ones.
Actually, then, they were at the previous Bia Bjog talk that I was at, when we're talking about oils in general.
Okay, and then there's our friends Bob and Joan out in Thomastown. They've been in to talk to us, and Susanna in Svartbels. And then there's two distilleries as well. There's the distillery out in Royal Oak, just on the other side of Paulstown, and then there's one in Ballykeith.
All right.
I think we might need to set up a visit out to see those, Mags, and do a bit of an OB from there maybe, or do a bit of recording.
Yep.
And then, of course, there's Helen Costello here in town, and Brega Valley down in New Park, and Riverside Farm Organic Vegetable Produce. All of those are on the website. The website address for Taste Kilkenny, tastekilkenny.ie.
Yeah,
and it's a lovely site, actually, and people should have a look at that and try and find some of those products and look them out. And your products, again, you sell on the markets on a Thursday.
We sell on the market on a Thursday, and we are in the Little Green Grocer and the Gourmet Store in High Street. We're at Glastrian Goodies, of course, in Gore, and we're in the Truffle Fairy in Thomastown.
Oh, yeah, lovely shop.
Probably in your range as well.
Yeah.
And we're in Chris Wong's in John Street and the Good Arse in New Park.
Super. And plans
And if there's any shop that would like us, let us know.
So you do have capacity then to go into some more shops?
Yes, we have capacity to go into a few more shops. We also have set up a new home delivery service.
Oh, very good.
If you want to deliver to your house, we deliver on Monday to Saturday, and Wednesdays and Friday we deliver for free.
I know we had some of your stuff out for the last River Cottage course at Crow and Cottages. We got a delivery out of your breads and they went down a treat. Everybody was raving about them. So thanks a million
very
for
good.
That. And plans for the future then?
Plans for the future are always bigger and better. Where we go, we have markets now in Carlow as well. We in Carrick on Shore, we're in loads of different places. We're in Inishtig as well. Forgot to shop in Inishtig. Sorry about that, Sammy. Every day in Inishtig we're in as well. We're in Dublin on Sundays now. So yes, we...
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're trying to expand. We do a couple of baking courses as well, which are competition there for my...
Well, there's so many people interested.
You do yours with the Dawn Chorus walks
and
everything
like
that. Oh yeah,
we do bits and pieces like that. We do Dawn Chorus always in April, where we go out at 5 o'clock in the morning to... My husband, who was here actually last week, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Liam,
he does the Dawn Chorus, and we supply a breakfast in the bakehouse at 7 o'clock afterwards.
I tell you, we have to go along to that.
I've been saying that to myself for years, and
we're
then
booking you in as an outside
do absolutely. We'll be there. I'm writing it down.
In the morning, though, Francis.
I'm writing it down. We could stay up from the night before. That's okay. No, that sounds fantastic.
Oh, it is good fun. It's a little bit different, you know, and it's. It's people like to see the bakehouse and see where it's all being produced, and we make a few fresh baguettes for the breakfast.
Oh, lovely. Now, nice. You did kind of just in passing mention earlier on at 1 o'clock in the morning you get up to knock the breads out. And
yeah.
What happens then? Do you go back to bed? Or
no,
is that
you work
up
until 8 o'clock and that's the bake done.
So you work overnight?
Well, I like to call it morning. It's all psychological.
From one... I suppose, strictly speaking, it is morning. Yeah. And then during the day, you're off selling then as well.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
It can be a very long day. Now, I have four working with me now. I have a brilliant team, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do this, because Alison's now in the bakehouse working. So it's like every second morning, I start at 1:30. And then it gets, if it's not market day, it's a start 2:30, 2:30.
Oh, lion.
It doesn't get much later than that.
And do you get somebody in to sleep for you, or do you...
No, I do that all on my own. You get used to it. It's just, it can be a very good time. I'm German. We are pre-programmed genetically for early mornings. So I find it easier than others. Maybe if my son now in a gap year, he works 2 mornings and he doesn't find it that easy.
But I wouldn't find it easy either.
But nobody interrupts you at that hour of the morning. You couldn't have to...
No, it's great. You just sit
head
there.
To yourself.
I have always a list while I'm baking, and all the good thoughts hit the paper at that time.
Oh.
So it's...
It's kind of meditation and work at the same time.
A bit like that, yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, Josephine, thanks a million for coming in to us today and talking to us all about your stuff and the other producers here in Kilkenny. So yeah. tastekilkenny.ie for everybody else. And do you have your own website?
We are speltbakers.ie. Yeah,
speltbakers.ie.
It's under production, under creation, Facebook and all that. I'm not brilliant at social media, but we're getting there.
Okay, but you're available in all of those outlets that you mentioned already.
We are.
In
we're
Kilkenny.
Always available on the phone. You find us fairly quickly on Google, so... we're easily contactable, and we would like to meet our customers and talk to them.
Well, as you can see by the messages coming in here on text, and you're in the farmer's market then in Kilkenny City on the parade
every Thursday. Yeah.
Excellent. Josephine, thanks a million for coming in to us. And just after the break, we're going to be talking to Mads McKeever down in Cork, but for now, we have to take a break.
I'm Ken Hawker at Mount Julia Estate, and you're listening to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. You can send in questions or comments by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text us, as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email the show kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, I'm hoping that we have Mads McKeever on the line down in Cork. Mads, can you hear me? Hello, Mads, can you hear me? We may have a bit of a problem there. I try and get Mads back on the line in just a couple of minutes. You said you had a bit of a recipe for us, Mags, would you? Well, maybe we could have a chat about that while I try and get...
January treat, I think, for the weekend.
Oh, very good.
Oats and chocolate cookies. So they're lots of oats. I'll just talk away to myself while you work that out. These are an Evan Maguire recipe that we actually make in our house an awful lot. They kind of last in the tin for a couple of days. But you need 50 grams of caster sugar, 100 grams of soft brown sugar, and then 250 grams of butter, 200 grams of self-raising flour, 100 grams of either plain or milk chocolate drops, 175 grams of porridge, and 100 grams of nuts. So use whatever nuts you like, walnuts, hazelnuts is our preference. So you want to cream the butter and sugars together, make them really nice and light and fluffy. Then beat in the flour, and then fold in the chocolate drops, the porridge oats and the nuts, and combine all that really nicely. And then you want to just make little balls of your mixture. So roll it in with your hand into a little ball, and then you can press it down when you put it onto your baking tray or onto your parchment paper. So push it down onto your baking tray and then pop them into the oven for about 15 to 20 minutes. And these are really delicious. Actually, I'm looking at my book here and it's got an awful lot of butter and flour and stuff stuck to that page because it's a well-used recipe. But they, and the teenager at home actually is very good at making these. So I'm hoping she's going to make these tonight for the baking class tomorrow. So after 15, 20 minutes and stuff, take them out of the oven onto a wire tray, and then you can just let them cool. And you probably want to eat them before they're cool. But they are really tasty, actually. I think everyone deserves a treat in January, so they are going to be this weekend's treat in our house. And anything else for the kitchen? For my bread class tomorrow, I'm going to do... we always have lunch kind of while doughs are rising and that. So we're going to do a butternut squash and ginger. It's a nice kind of a fresh soup, but very hearty at the same time. It's butternut squash and ginger soup. And with that, we'll have some focaccia with probably cheese, olives, and maybe some oregano.
That sounds good. Is there any places left on the course?
There's actually one place left. A guy cancelled earlier in the week. So
if anybody wants to take up that place, they can find you on Facebook?
Yeah, give me a shout on Facebook.
Or Hedgehog Bakery.
Hedgehog Bakery.
Very good. And I'm hoping now that we have Mads on the line. Mads, can you hear us?
I can. Oh, yes, indeed.
Excellent. We were having some technical issues in the background there. Fair play to you, Mags, for talking away while myself and Mads got it organised. I'm joined on the line by Mads McKeever from Brown Envelope Seeds down in Cork. Isn't that right, Mads?
That's right, yeah. Down in deep West Cork.
In deep West Cork, exactly right. And what's the weather like down there today?
Well, it's quite bright and nice, but it has been very, very miserable and wet, yeah.
I think that's the case for the whole of Ireland, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of makes you need to rethink how you do things a bit if we're going to get winters like this in the future.
They're so miserable and wet. Maybe head even further south from Cork and don't stop until you get to Portugal or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Is it a busy time of the year for you down in at Brown Envelope?
Yeah, we're just getting busy now. I'm actually, what you could hear in the background maybe earlier, I've just paused it now, is the printer's busy printing out catalogues.
Really?
And we're putting that in the post and we're packing orders, and next month we'll start planting things for next year.
And when did you get set up down there, Mads, and how did you set up Brown Envelope Seeds?
Well, I suppose I always was a gardener, you know, all my life. And when I was in America years ago, I was woofing on an organic farm there, and I met some people who worked in Johnny's Seeds up in Maine. And they gave me a tour of Johnny's Seeds back in about 1984. And then I came back to Ireland and I was milking cows for 15 years. But I kind of had this in the back of my mind that you know, it wasn't rocket science producing vegetable seeds. And then when I gave up the cows in 99, I didn't know what to do with myself, really. So we had got involved in starting a farmer's market in Skibbereen. And I had a few bits of veg and that to sell, and I had beef, but I didn't have very much. So I started bringing in a few seeds that I'd saved myself. And it just started from there. And then I wanted to have them certified as organic, and I rang the organic people and they said, oh, you must register with the department. And I rang the department and they said, oh, yeah, we'll send you out a form. And I said, by the way, how many other vegetable seed producers are there in Ireland registered? And they said, actually none.
Oh, wow.
So it seemed like a business opportunity at the same time.
Yeah. And are you still the only one registered as organic?
I think the Irish Seed Savers are registered now, but I think that's it.
Oh, well, very good. And what is it that you produce now? So your range, I presume, has grown since those early days.
Yes, well, we produce all the normal vegetables, you know, Onions and carrots and tomatoes, and I'm just looking at a catalogue here to prompt me. Melons, parsnips, peas, leaves, and then we do some grains. We do quinoa, and we do, you know, oats and wheat and things like in small packets people do in the garden. And we do kale and cauliflower and broccoli and amaranth and cucumbers, beetroot, leaf beet. You know, there's pretty much all the basic ones, you know.
I'm glad you didn't mention my personal favourite of yours, which is the chilies. You've a great range of chili seeds down there, chili varieties.
There's a fair few chilies, yeah. The thing about chilies is they cross with each other, so we can only kind of do one at a time.
All right.
Although there are some different species, because, you know, the Bolivian hairy chilies are a different species to the usual chilies and the sweet peppers. And because if you grew chili along with the sweet pepper, they'd cross, and people might get cross if they got they thought it was a sweet pepper and it turned out to be mad hot.
Yeah, yeah, or vice versa. The habaneros no heat in them at all.
Yeah, yeah. So we have two polytunnels about half a mile apart, so we can do the sweet peppers in one tunnel and a chili a year in the other tunnel, and then one of the chilies that's a different species we can do as well.
Oh, and then are you able to save the seeds from one year to the next so that your range is maintained?
Yeah, well, the seeds will keep for a few years, yeah.
Very good, yeah. Very good. And I do see on Twitter that you're constantly doing tests on the seed to make sure that they're still viable and so on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, going back to my visit to Johnny's Seeds in Maine in 1980-something, I said, how do you test the seeds? And they said, oh, well, we put 100 seeds on a bit of tissue paper in a plastic box and see if they come up. And, it's, you know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
I had a lot of light bulb moments that day, because although I had studied botany in college, it had just never dawned on me, where did you get seeds off a carrot? and then you realise that a lot of vegetables take 2 years. The first year you get the carrot or the leek or the cabbage, and then the next year you get the seeds. So we're really eating the vegetables as kind of pre-adolescence, you know.
I understand. I know what you mean. Now, I'm a big fan of the hairy Bolivian, which is one of the ones you mentioned, and some of the other chilies. And talking to somebody about seeds kind of gives me that itch to get out and get planting, but it's still a bit too early for most things, isn't it?
Well, it depends how big your windowsills are or if you have a heated greenhouse, the luxury of a heated greenhouse. Yeah. I mean, you can start your tomatoes and chilies now, but, you know, you can't put them out in an unheated tunnel till April. So your windowsill has to be big enough to keep them going till April, really.
Mm.
So if there's any danger of frost. But depending where you are and how far up a hill you are and how... You know, whether, you know, sometimes I would do things a bit early and I might have trays of plants, but I might have to run out and bring them into the house for the night if I thought it was going to freeze, you know?
Yeah, so there's a bit more work involved in the kind of early starts, just like the lads who produce the early lambs every year. There's a bit more work and minding involved.
Exactly, yes. And kind of, that isn't the light, you know, you'd want to put a light over things if you started them in January, you know?
I do find, though, that some of the crops really benefit. If you do give them that extra bit of attention and an extra bit of time, they really do benefit from the early start. The likes of the chilies, for example, or the tomatoes. If you do have a bit of heat, if you have a
definitely,
heated greenhouse or a heated propagator, they really benefit from the extra long growing year.
Definitely, definitely. The Bolivian hairies particularly are slow to ripen. Mine are still ripening. Actually, they're still ripening away out in the polytunnel.
I'm still harvesting from last year as well. I just put a photograph on Twitter there on Monday night of a basket of chilies that I took from the greenhouse. And my greenhouse suffered terribly in Storm Ophelia and still has two holes in the roof that I just can't get a machine up to fix. So even though the greenhouse isn't that hot anymore, I'm still picking those chilies.
Yeah. As long as they don't get hot, they'd even take a mild frost, I think. I don't think they'd take the hard one, but they'll definitely take and they live for several years. You know, they'll turn into a tree.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And is the crop...
Again, if you can keep them from a frost, yeah.
Yeah. And does the crop vary year on year? Are they better in the first year, or will they just keep on producing?
I'm not really sure. I've never kept them for more than 2 years.
Mm.
Because I've usually either killed them or decided that I had enough chili seeds of that kind for now and chucked them out. Yeah, I don't know. There's some friends of mine in Clonakilty. They've had a plant for, I think, about 5 or 6 years. And it's in their kind of conservatory, I think, or their porch or something.
Yeah.
And it's a tree now.
So the tail end of the season, the cold doesn't seem to bother them, but at the start, it obviously will when they're young and weak. A bit of minding at the start. Any other tips for anybody who's thinking about growing some chili varieties this year?
Chilies, I suppose they like plenty of manure and they like water. You know, they're kind of like tomatoes, really. They like a bit of feeding and they like plenty of light and heat, yeah.
Very good. And your seeds then, how can people find Brown Envelope Seeds online?
Well, we're all over the interweb, yeah, brownenvelopeseeds.com. And that's probably the easiest way to order them. But if you're not an internet kind of person, you can contact me and I'll post you out a paper catalogue.
Very good. But they can find you online. And you're on Facebook as well?
Yep, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everywhere, although I don't do a lot of Instagram. It all takes too much time.
Yeah, really, you need to get the day job done as well.
Yeah.
Mads McKeever, thanks a million. It's a pleasure being talking to you all the way down there in Cork about what you do. I'm a huge fan of yourself and the daughter and the work that you do and your seeds, and I can testify to how good they are. So you can find Mads on brownenvelopeseeds.com. Mads, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Francis.
Now, Mags, are you inspired to go seed shopping?
Well, I'm dying to go gardening, actually. It feels like a longish winter now, doesn't it?
It really seems to be dragging out. Now, I wonder, is it the same at this time every year where we start to get a bit tired of the cold and the damp?
I feel this year is particularly bad, actually.
It has seemed like a very, very, very long winter, all right. But I will be picking up at least that catalogue from Mads. Now, I've saved some seed myself from the chilies and tomatoes, but I'm sure she has loads more varieties down there. The temptation is always to get too many, and
yes,
then
I know.
You very quickly run out of space where to put all of
but
these.
But then you can just give them away to friends and everything, no?
Yeah, I suppose is that you hinting that I could start the plants for you maybe this year?
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, well, I'll get the catalogue and maybe we can talk about it in here someday. So we already talked about your course, what's coming up tomorrow. The only other thing then to touch on, I suppose, is while we're out in the garden, is a few more jobs to do this
week. What have you in mind for this weekend?
Well, there's very little that you can do on the beds, of course, because they're so mucky and wet. And really all you're doing is compacting the soil if you go walking on them and just making yourself miserable. So it's a few jobs that I can do from the path or from a dry bit of the lawn. There are some dogwoods that I've kept over the winter that have the most beautiful red stems. They're absolutely gorgeous, really, really bright and kind of cheery over the winter. But while they're still dormant, now's the time to take some cuttings from them. Oh. Or even just to cut them down, because if you leave them, those beautiful red stems on the dogwood will become brown as they mature. And it's only the young growth that tends to have that really bright, vibrant colour.
Oh, okay.
So the dogwoods will need to be cut. I'll cut them in stages and then I'll either sell or give away some of the cuttings. And you can start them very like willow. Really, they're quite easy to get going.
Okay, I have some actually.
Yeah.
I use them in Christmas wreaths.
Yes. Well, it's the young stems that are nice and pliable. They'd work really, really well with that. But if you leave those in the ground, unless it's a one of the miniature varieties, but most of them will get very, very bushy.
Okay.
And you'll miss the...
The nice red
growth next year.
Okay.
So that's one of the jobs that I have to do this weekend. And then some hedges, if you're able to get near the hedges while they're dormant as well, it's a good time to go at them. But none that would be susceptible to frost. So the likes of the cypresses, I'd leave those well alone, or the escalonias, you don't really want to be touching any of those.
So you could do your hawthorn hedges and...
Yeah. Exactly. So all of the kind of deciduous ones that have no leaves on them before the growth starts, now's the time to put a bit of shape on those. And then order some seeds. I want to get those catalogues in and start having a think about what it is that I'm going to grow. And then, of course, there's the jobs that we should mention at this every week, really, at this time of the year. So that's make sure you continue to feed the birds. So if you are putting out feed for the birds, don't let those run empty, because the birds very quickly learn to rely on them. And actually, when you fill the feeders, it's amazing how quickly the birds come straight over to you.
They just obviously watching.
Yeah. So it's seed in the cedar, in the seed trays for the birds.
Flower Power has a great selection of seeds and a great selection of different types of feeders.
Oh, very
feeders
good.
To keep crows out,
yes.
Feeders for particular birds. And he actually will tell you what bird would like what seed and everything. He's a great selection down there, actually.
So that's Pat in Flower Power, just on the Ring Road.
Yeah.
On the Dublin Road.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very good. That's a great spot to go to. So that's an important one. And then, of course, any of the stored fruits or whatever that you still have in the shed or in trays, check them to make sure that the mice haven't moved in and are living in among them. But that's pretty much it. We've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week. We hope you out there all enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at NesbitF or at Mags Morrissey, or you can email us thekitchengarden@corkc.ie. We're going to leave you with a little bit of music this week. This one seemed appropriate. It's by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and it's the Ship Song. And we'll be back live next Friday at 4 o'clock, and the show is repeated every Monday at 4. Have a good week.
Sail your ships around me and burn your bridges down. We make a little history, baby, every time you come around. Come loose your dogs on me and let your hair hang down. You are a little mystery to me. Every time you call around, we talk about it all.